Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, I mentioned to you this the other day, such an important topic. We, if you recall, a couple weeks ago, we talked to a police officer from the Chicago Police Department to hear from him what's exactly happening on the front lines as a result of everything that's been kind of coming unglued for the last several weeks. Go back to Memorial Day with George Floyd. And then as the protests erupted and looting and vandalizing, and then it didn't take long to get into the whole conversation about defunding the police, abolishing the police, hating the police, hassling the police, screaming at the police, yelling at the police, in some cases attacking the police. We've had some police officers shot and killed around the country, and it's just been a brutal season to watch unfold. And I'm here with my good friend Ralph Thompson. We're with emergency chaplains here in Durham, North Carolina. Echap.org is the website. An incredible ministry that's been around since 2008. Not only police, but all first responders. But Ralph's also a former Baptist pastor. Well, you're never really a former. Yeah. It's kind of like being a Marine. You're never really a former Baptist pastor. But you've been dealing with this for 19 years. And so we're going to unpack kind of Ralph's perspective. We're also going to talk to a 30-year veteran, Deputy Chief Larry Smith, who retired from the Durham Police Department just a few years ago after serving 30 years. We're going to talk to him in the second segment as well as the third segment and kind of get that frontline perspective, how this is affecting our police officers, the ones that are there, recruitment, ones that are leaving. It's such a brutal situation, and I'm sure it's changed things on the ground. But Ralph, great to be with you. Good to see you. Yeah. And thanks for letting me come in here today.
Yeah, man. Welcome to the international headquarters.
The intergalactic headquarters here, yeah. Of emergency chaplains. And one thing that we were mentioning before we went on the air, and then we'll talk a little 101 emergency chaplains, but I said it's kind of like Vietnam when our soldiers are coming back from Vietnam. All of a sudden, that's a publicized war. The public largely turned on them. And then you said something that it's worse than Vietnam. Oh, so yeah. So from your perspective, having dealt with this arena for 19 years now, just kind of take me through what you're seeing, what you're experiencing, as we've seen a significant portion of the country, not just individual citizens, but leaders at the federal, state, and local level, elected officials, literally turn on the police department.
Yeah, it's worse than Nam because we're turning on the very people who protect us. And the neighborhood, every neighborhood's going to be affected by that. The effect that this is having right now on our law enforcement officers, it's not a scientific poll, but I can tell you that every officer from the guy that just started to the guy that's getting ready to retire, it has crossed that officer's mind to leave the profession.
Man. You've never really seen anything happen like this before with the police department. Have you?
Well, we've seen bits and pieces of it during times of turmoil, especially here in Durham. We had a lot of protests a few years ago, and one of the things that I came to realize at that time in talking with officers who needed to talk about the stress of the job, I saw grown men cry and not want to go to work. I saw men that they loved their profession, but now they dreaded putting the uniform on.
Wow. Yeah. And how are they responding? And we're going to talk to Larry Smith here in the next segment, who's served at the Durham Police Department for 30 years. But they're not superhuman. So how are they dealing with this? I mean, we're going to get into this more, but yeah. I just want to kind of get into that off the bat.
Well, two really good things that are happening right now is law enforcement's a family. And inside the family, there is a closeness that you have at a time of war,
yeah.
When you're in battle.
Yeah.
So they've got each other's back better than ever before. Relationships inside the department, especially in the ranks. But the other part that I really like about it is when I stop into a station now, they like to see me even more than before. Mm-hmm. I mean, people just love to see me. I'm sure.
Sure. Yeah. Of course.
But
goes
now,
without saying.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But now we need to talk. And I've had some very interesting conversations over the past couple of months, even in different jurisdictions. We serve over 25 different agencies out of here, and I've been to some different places and talked to folks. And the consensus is there. It's morale issues. The hatred toward law enforcement right now is you talk about a pandemic.
Yeah.
We got it.
Yeah.
Especially in places where life is the toughest and where there's the most crime, you have the most pushback against police officers. And we're not unpacking why that is in terms of things that have happened in our society. We're going to just focus on the police officers today. But it is amazing to watch. But to your point about things that are good, I've never seen it. The contrast between the clarity that comes through the gospel, the hope that comes through the gospel, the truth and grace that comes through the gospel relative to what's going on in our little part of the world right now. I've never seen a contrast as big as it is right now, which I think we need to all remember. We're all Esthers right now for such a time as this. We're going to unpack that. But let's back up a little bit and just tell everybody a little bit about the history of emergency chaplains, how it got started, and what you guys actually do.
Well, like you said, I was a Baptist pastor. I was just happy as a pig in slop doing my just being a pastor. And I started out doing chaplaincy after 9/11. A local fire department asked me to be their chaplain, and I'd been praying about that opportunity. Mm-hmm. God just opened that door wide open, and so it began in 2001. From that point, God began to open doors, more and more doors, for me to serve in different types of first responder agencies. And the Lord led us to walk away from our paying job. At that point, chaplaincy was my hobby.
Yeah,
a one-day-a-week thing, and the Lord led us to do it full time. So my wife and I, we prayed about it. The Great Recession, 2007, 2008 is when we started. And we started out in tough times and trusted God to build a ministry. And today we're in, I think, 14 different counties in North Carolina, 25 different agencies. We serve about 70 volunteer chaplains.
Yeah, with a big vision, 25 by 25, which is 2,500 trained chaplains by 2025. And we're going to talk about that. So, and you guys, as we move towards this conversation today, and we'll hear soon from Larry Smith, who's a retired Durham Police Department officer. He's a deputy chief, but he served for 30 years. We're going to talk about ways that you can engage and ways that you can be a part of it, whether you're a part of the ministry or just things that you can do on the street in your personal life. So make sure you stick with us for the whole show, because we're going to, this is one of those times when we all need to be asking ourselves, what do I do? How can I help this? How can I engage? How can I be a part of the solution rather than a part of the problem? We're not talking about ignoring the problems that are real and that need to be dealt with. We're talking about the bigger problem that we have a country, to a certain extent, that's turning its back on our police officers, and we need to be there to serve them like Ralph is and his team in emergency chaplains. When we come back, we'll talk to Larry Smith, the deputy chief of Durham, used to be in the police department. We'll be right back. What are we waiting for? A message in the sky. Welcome back to Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, live today from the headquarters of Emergency Chaplains. eChap.org is the website, eChap.org, as in Emergency Chaplains, eChap.org. Go there. We'll talk about, before we get to the end of the show, different ways that you can get engaged, whether it's the 25 by 25 campaign, which is 2,500 trained chaplains by 2025, maybe financially, maybe the Lord leading you to become a chaplain yourself or be a part of what Emergency Chaplains is doing, not only ministering on the front lines to police, but fire and EMS, all the first responders out there. And it's just an amazing ministry, deeply, deeply needed in the regular season. But now in this dark season that we're in, since George Floyd and the protests and everything else, defund the police, get rid of the police, the animosity towards the police, which I think is directed by a small minority in the country, but the media is behind it. We've got elected officials from the federal government down to the local government that are also involved in that. There's a lot of virtue signaling going on there, a lot of just things that are not pleasing to the Lord, obviously, and then just terrible in terms of how we are treating our police. And we're here with Ralph Thompson, the executive director of Emergency Chaplains. And Ralph, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got to know Larry Smith, and then I'll pull Larry into our conversation.
I started serving the Durham Police Department early on in the Ministry of Emergency Chaplains, probably 2009. I met Larry, and he had, I think he was a captain with the police department then, and we became close friends, dear brother in the Lord, and spent a lot of time up on the fifth floor at the old station praying with him and other leaders in the police department there. But he's a dear, dear friend.
Yeah, and Larry served for 30 years with the Durham Police Department, most recently as the deputy chief. Larry Smith, thank you so much for calling in and being a part of the show today. How are you?
I'm doing great, Steve. It's good to be with you. And hello, Brother Ralph.
Hey, Larry.
Yeah, we certainly appreciate your time, Larry. And before we go down any other roads, thank you so much for your service to the community over all those years. And I'm sure we don't ever say that enough. I think we've gotten better at doing that with our military. But I think it's a season now that we all need to get a whole lot better with respect to our police and first responders. But, Larry, I wanted to talk to you just generally because all of your decades of experience, as we've seen, you know, a significant portion of the nation literally turn on police officers and the police departments. How do you kind of read this? How are you processing through this as a police officer, but as a believer as well?
Well, you know, Steve, I try not to become frustrated and angry. Police work is a profession I love. It's a profession I was part of for many years. I have many, many friends still there. And when you see all these things, and you mentioned, you know, right after the break about, you know, so many people are coming out now with the defund the police, the anti-police message. But that there are a large majority of and most of citizens still support the police. And so, you know, you try not to become angry and understand that is really is a small minority, but right now that's what gets the message. And so what it does, it affects the officers. And then, you know, it's harder to do your job. And, you know, you're worried about your livelihood. It seems to me, and I was there after the Michael Brown incident, which kind of set off the whole, you know, defund the police, you know, the hands up, don't shoot, Black Lives Matter organization kind of kicked off after that. And just a lot of things that simply were found not to be true. For example, the hands up, don't shoot, we found out after the investigation, the federal investigation of that, that's simply not what happened there. You know, and I think truth matters. And certainly there's been some things that's happened in law enforcement that shouldn't have happened. There's not an officer that I know of that thinks what happened to George Floyd should have happened. That was one of the most sickening things I've ever seen as a law enforcement officer. And I knew what it was going to cause. I knew the distrust it was going to continue to build in our profession, and that bothered me. And so, you know, as I processed it as a former officer, I keep in touch with a lot of my buddies who are still working. You know, they're really concerned about, you know, what's going on, their ability to do their job, even if they're right. You know, what consequences would they face?
Right.
And then, you know, as a believer, Steve, I have to remind myself this is ultimately a spiritual battle. This is really a battle of the forces of good versus evil spiritually. And remind myself that the scripture says we wrestle with flesh, you know, not against flesh and blood, but with powers and principalities. And that's what's going on.
Yeah, and that whether we're talking about the police situation, COVID, masks, whatever you want to do in this crazy year that we're in the middle of now, we're just seeing in the natural what we're seeing is all based in the supernatural. It's all a spiritual issue, and it's so important for us to remember that. And I always ask people, Larry, all the time, is when we see these things happening, whether it's like the little 8-year-old girl that was shot and killed because she and her mom crossed whatever barrier those folks at the Wendy's down in Atlanta the other day, or you see a protest gone poorly or the police being abused, do you respond first and foremost as an American? Do you respond first and foremost politically, or do you respond with your spirit and lament over the condition of the world? But you mentioned morale with the police officers. So for the officers, and I'm sure you're still very tied into all of that, how's morale generally for our police officers right now?
Well, it's terrible. I mean, when you go to work and you're afraid to do your job, because, as I mentioned, as we've seen so many times, it really won't matter whether you're right. You know, at the end of the day, after the investigations are done and all the, you know, and all the it's looked into how you handled it, and it comes out that actually what you did was lawful. But by that time, you know, it's just been portrayed in the media and out in social media as if what you did was terrible, and your reputation's tarnished. And so, you know, officers are just afraid to do their job. I've called them many times through this just to keep in touch with them and encourage them. That's why the ministry that Ralph does is so, so important. You know, officers are not very open people outside of their ranks. And the thing with Ralph, and I've always told him this, you know, even though I was picking at him, I could always count to look back on those briefings, and there sat Ralph. I mean, he was always around. And so people get comfortable with him and many of the chaplains. And so officers are typically not going to be forthright, but if you kind of get to know them a little bit and get in their world a little bit, they will open up because they are afraid and morale is down. And, you know, I was at a seminar or a panel right before I retired, and there was with some discussing some of these very issues. and there was an North Carolina Central professor there, and we were talking about some of these things, and he said something I thought was interesting. He said he had thought about commissioning a study to see how many second-generation police officers there may be now compared to 20 years ago.
Right.
And I told him, I said, if you do that study, I would be very curious to see what the results are, because I would imagine that it's going to be much less your second, third-generation police officers going forward than it would have been 20 or 30 years ago.
Yeah, because in terms of being out on the street and actually functioning and doing the job, I would imagine, like you said, that even if you do something right, it can be perceived as wrong. When the judge, jury, and executioner shows up as soon as somebody's iPhone's on and as soon as it hits social media. So do police officers tend to then kind of pull back and maybe not engage as easily, or they're just hesitant? How does that manifest itself actually out on the street?
Well, I'll tell you exactly how it manifests itself. So. After when it was all going on during the Michael Brown issues, and I knew officers were starting to disengage and not be proactive. You really need proactive policing. You know, I say proactive, I mean not just taking calls, looking for suspicious behavior, criminal activity, and those things. I went to our crime analysis analyst, and I said, I want you to pull me our traffic stops and our on-view arrest. An on-view arrest is where an officer initiated something, where he made the arrest because of something he initiated and saw. And in a one-year period after all that stopped, our traffic stops had plummeted a massive amount. I mean, on-view arrest, way down.
Oh, man.
And I'm sure that's the case now. Probably worse.
Exactly right. Larry, I'm going to put you on hold. We're talking to Larry Smith, served 30 years on the Durham Police Department here in North Carolina, as well as Ralph Thompson, who's here from Emergency Chaplains. This is Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. A very, very important conversation. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, The Steve Noble Show, here today with Ralph Thompson, who's the Executive Director of Emergency Chaplains. They've been around since 2008, but Ralph's been engaging in chaplaincy with first responders and police officers for 19 years now, and emergency chaplains right on the front line. It was already a difficult job. Ralph, you were just saying this on the break. It was already an incredibly difficult job, incredibly hard to recruit for. Now we go into this mess, and we're going to talk to Larry Smith again in just a second. Larry, I'll pull you back in just a second. He served for 30 years locally here at the Durham Police Department in North Carolina, also as the deputy chief. But you brought up a poll that was just, a week ago
June
or something?
30th.
June 30th.
June 30th.
And this is just brutal,
right,
which shows us, here's what we're setting ourselves up for. Right now, the defund and get rid of the police movement is just a little snowball at the top of the hill. But as it goes down and gets bigger, this poll really reveals where we're going to go with all this.
Yeah, so 10,000 officers polled asked if they would recommend police work to a son or daughter. 80% said no, while just 7% said they would.
Man. Yeah, and there was somebody on Facebook Live that said, you know, kids going off to college, don't tell your new friends at college what dad does for a living. Somebody else on Facebook Live mentioned just recently she saw husband driving by, little kids, 2 and 3 year olds, on the hood of a car, and yelled and were given the officer,
number one son,
giving him the bird.
Oh my goodness.
2 and 3 years of age, sitting on the hood of a car. All of a sudden, I mean, it's just brutal. So I wanted to, taking that information, go back to our friend Larry Smith, again, who's served for 30 years in the Durham Police Department, most recently as the deputy chief and retired a few years ago. So when you hear that poll, Larry, that seems the poll and the numbers go exactly to what you were saying just a few minutes ago, that second-generation policing is pretty much going to be DOA at this point.
Well, it will be, Steve. And you know, I've got two sons. My youngest one I thought maybe would have been interested. It turns out now he's a missionary, which I'm proud of that as well.
Yeah, amen.
You know, and I would have been proud to see him in a Durham police uniform. But if he came to me now and said, "Look, Dad, I'm thinking about it now," I would discourage it. I would absolutely discourage it because it's a challenging enough career as it is, even before this. But now, you know, I would worry as a dad that once again he can be completely right and his life could be destroyed. So that poll doesn't surprise me one bit. And you mentioned recruiting; we were already struggling to recruit before I retired because of many of the things that were going on. I can't imagine what it's like trying to recruit. And I know the Durham Police Department's running short in staffing for the few officers that do, few young men and women that do want to go into the law enforcement profession. Everybody's battling for them. Raleigh wants them. Durham wants them. Chapel Hill wants them. They're offering all kinds of incentives. And you, as that pool gets smaller and smaller, and I can tell you, Steve, the last thing you want to do is lower your standards.
Because
you lower them standards, and you're talking about back problems, there'll be problems. And the communities and the profession will suffer for that.
Oh, yeah. You know, and you mentioned this earlier, and I know Ralph agrees with this. Certainly, I've been talking about it on the air. What percentage of police officers across the country probably shouldn't have the job today? I don't know. That's up for argument and analysis. But none of us are saying it's 100% pure. No group is, no profession is, because it's made up of human beings. But in terms of kind of policing, police efforts, Larry, and I don't want to spend much time on this, but I think it's an important question just to touch on briefly. What could help in terms of identifying police officers that probably should have a different line of work?
Well, I mean, Steve, in Durham, we had something through our professional standards division, commonly known as internal affairs. We actually had a system set up through a computer system that if an officer got a certain amount of complaints, pulled a flag. And so we could go in and take a look at that officer and see what's going on, maybe go ahead and direct them into some training, find out there's something going on in their personal lives. So in your professional agencies, many of them are on the forefront of that already. But I will tell you what I'm totally opposed to that's kind of been alluded to is this idea, well, let's go in and just open up every officer's IA file and see what kind of complaints they have. Because I will tell you that just because an officer has a lot of complaints does not mean they're a bad officer. It depends on where they've worked their whole career, the type of units they've worked in. So you can't just look at that on face value. You got to look at the underlying factors of that. But in Durham, we already had a system, and it was an early warning system for those officers that we might need to retrain or talk to them early on about this profession.
Yeah, and I want you to jump back in here as well, Ralph. And if there was a great need for emergency chaplains and reaching out to these police officers, which Larry mentioned this earlier, Larry, you said, because Ralph, you need to be invested. You need to be a part of that community. Otherwise, they're not going to open up to you. They're not going to talk to people outside of that unique fraternity there. But now more than ever, in terms of having chaplaincy there, first you, Ralph, and then you, Larry. I mean, now it's, and then it sounds trite to say that now more than ever, but goodness gracious, that's got to be true.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like I told you before, they were they're happier to see me now than ever before, and it's because they need to talk. It's a great need. Law enforcement officers are not known for their neediness.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make them – they're not really good at their job if they're really needy. But right now, man, I'm telling you, there's a lot of need in the ranks.
And, Larry – most of us assume police officers are really tough. That's a tough nut to crack. But once you get in there and develop relationships like you have and like Ralph has, can you see some real progress there with police officers? Will they eventually open up if we invest and take the time to be a part of that community?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think if they know that and that's what's made Ralph's organization so successful is consistency. Because there's always people coming by and saying, hey, we appreciate what you do, and that's good. But if you really want to, get to know an officer and trying to find out a little bit about their life and get them feel comfortable talking with you, it would take that consistency of being there. And I know some of his chaplains ride along in some stations. Ralph, as he mentioned, he was always up at headquarters. And even still today, if I hear of something that's going on in an officer's life, there's still a lot of the connections I have. I'll call Ralph and say, look, Ralph, I just found this out. How about give him a call or send a chaplain? And I know he's going to. And so those things matter because he's right. They really – and they believe me, they talk amongst themselves.
Oh, I bet.
They do. Officers talk amongst themselves. There's no doubt about that. But what you want to do is get someone talking to them, maybe even from the outside, to give them maybe a little bit different perspective or, to help them, open up a little bit and just burn off that steam in maybe a little different way.
Well, one more question for you, Larry, then I'll let you go. Now, most people can't be chaplains, although we obviously want more and more people to become chaplains, and we're going to talk about that in the last segment of the show. But speak to those of us that aren't in emergency chaplains. We're not pastoral-type people. We're just regular citizens that care about the police. As a 30-year veteran, what's your advice for us? What's your kind of call to action for the rest of us, Larry, and how we can be a part of the solution instead of the problem?
Okay, a few things. Number one, if you see an officer out in uniform eating or something, look, if you want to go up and say, look, I just want you to know I appreciate what you're doing. I know you're getting a lot of grief out here, but we support you and we appreciate what you're doing. And leave it at that. I will tell you that officers deal with people every day, and when they're sitting down eating or taking a break and you come up, I will tell you their first thought is, oh, gosh, what do they want?
Right,
but they
right.
don't mind you coming up saying, hey, we appreciate, you know, what you're doing. A lot of times I had my lunch bought for me or something. Just that token appreciation.
Yep.
You know, support organizations and things that support law enforcement. I'll give a plug for Ralph. If you're not the chaplain type, then support financially those who are. You know, Emergency Chaplains is a great organization. It's a funded organization, and so I would encourage all your readers to consider supporting Ralph's organization, because he can tap into those folks who do want to do that and go out and work in those police officers. And then, you know, support organizations that you feel like are going to be part of the solution and not part of the problem.
And then how should we direct our prayers? I mean, I'll do that on the air occasionally. We just pray for police officers in general. But as a 30-year veteran, give us some tips on how we can pray specifically for them.
Well, I pray for their safety. I pray that God will keep a hedge of protection around them. And then I also pray that they will enforce the law right, as righteously as a fallen man can. Okay, so that's two prayer points, that God would keep them safe and that they won't allow things to affect how they enforce the law, whether they're having a bad day, whether they've got a bias they should be dealing with, whatever it is, but that they would enforce the law as fairly and as righteously as they possibly can. Because, you know, another deputy chief that served with me, Anthony Marsh, when we would meet with the officers to try to keep them encouraged, he said something I never forgot. He said, we will change this climate one encounter at a time.
Wow.
And so you have an encounter like George Floyd, look what it's done. How are we going to change it? We're not going to change that with one encounter. We're going to change it with multiple positive encounters and show, you know, the nation that that's not what law enforcement officers are.
Yeah, what a great point.
But it's hard to fight against the media who every bad event, they run in there and they play it for days and days and days.
Yeah, they make every event look like the normal event, and that's just not true.
Absolutely, yeah.
Larry Smith, God bless you, brother. Thank you so much for your service, and thank you for blessing us with your time today. It's been great.
Thanks, Larry.
Okay, thanks, Steve.
All right, you're welcome. We'll talk to you later. We'll catch you later. That's what a wonderful blessing he is. And that's when you pray, and we're going to hit the break here in just a second, but when you pray with police officers, that must be pretty powerful.
You
actually sit there and pray with them.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that when we come back. We'll talk about how we can all get involved. And then before we're done today, Ralph Thompson, the executive director of Emergency Chaplains, is going to have a plea to the church as well as a plea to police officers. So we'll do that before we finish the show today. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show, one of the most important topics we can be covering right now. Thank God that we have the opportunity to do so. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Really, really important topic today. Thank you for those of you that have been able to be with us the whole time. By the way, if you missed it, if you're just tuning in, we're talking about how we can minister care for and serve our police officers, especially in this season that we've never really seen it before. I'm here with Ralph Thompson, who's the executive director of Emergency Chaplains. That's echap.org. They're here in the Triangle area of North Carolina. But before we even started the show, talking about how bad it is, especially for police officers right now with the defund movement, just get rid of police officers, not in the media, it just blows it up. Larry Smith was on earlier, former deputy chief at Durham Police Department here in North Carolina. 30 years he served there. And that's all you see. So when you watch the media, it just becomes, it's like a it's like a tornado. And so you put a couple of red pickup trucks inside a tornado, and you're going to think there's pickup trucks everywhere. You think that's going to be that's the norm. And so every time there's been one of these incidents with police, the media jumps on it, and now you start thinking, well, so many of the police officers are corrupt, and there's unrighteousness, and they're just abusing African Americans, yada yada yada. So we're in the and there is some of that that's true. Nobody's denying that, but largely we've turned our backs. The country has, and from the federal government to the state government to local government, getting involved with this defund movement as well, which is just ridiculous. And like Larry was saying, Ralph, recruiting's going to be a problem. You mentioned that 80% of officers, 10,000 officers polled just recently, 80% of them said they would not recommend to a son or daughter, don't follow in my footsteps. And we think it's bad now. Wait till then. And we haven't even talked about job losses going on right now. But one of the things that the questions that we have is, what can we do about it? And when you hear, hey, join Emergency Chaplains, get trained to be a chaplain, I think a lot of people go, oh, that's a little above my pay grade. So talk to us a little bit about what does it take to actually be a chaplain?
You know, last time I was on your show, it was a guy listening from Winston-Salem who heard us, and named Jerry. I think Jerry's probably listening right now. But Jerry called me because God moved on his heart. He wanted to be a chaplain. Wasn't a pastor. He was not ordained. He was just a layperson who had a burden for ministering to first responders. And he has started a new ministry in Yadkin County. And we're going to grow that to help him grow.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Now, be careful when you say just a layperson. Because Peter was just a layperson. Paul was just a layperson.
I was, too, at one time.
Yeah, that's where... We like when we say something like what you're talking about, Jerry, and instead of go, wow, he's a superstar Christian. And from most of our perspectives, instead of go, yeah, that's pretty amazing. That actually shouldn't be amazing.
Right.
That should be normal.
Well, in order to be a chaplain, all a chaplain is a follower of Jesus living out the Great Commission with a territory.
Mm.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's all that a chaplain is. You can be a chaplain of a bus stop.
Right. Yeah. What a great point. So in terms of becoming an actual trained chaplain, because I know you've got basic training for chaplaincy, walk us through how that works.
Well, we've just started a training and certification program here. Our goal, like you said, is to train 2,500 new chaplains by 2025, the old 25 by 25 program. It's a basic training that we have edited ourselves. We borrowed some material. We've had some put on loan. We have some third-party trainers helping us. But it's a comprehensive program that involves, I think, about 110 hours. I need to do the math. But it's over 100 hours, I think, of training in order to gain certification. And you have to maintain that certification and especially the church connection through the representative of a local church.
And then how... Once you get certified, what's kind of time requirement? Because are we talking about people that are kind of semi-retired, retired folks? Who really fits the bill?
Well, it's we tailor it for the chaplain. We help them develop their ministry, and wherever they are, if they have the time to do more, you know, of course, we always encourage them to do as much as they can, and especially to pray about making chaplaincy ministry their primary ministry. To be, because a lot of people are busy at church. And I think you should be active in the ministry of your church, but you also should be able to...
No, they aren't.
Well, but you should be able to balance
that. I'm the
that.
Jerk, though. I know what you mean. But most people are not all that involved with their church.
Right, but you need to be able to balance that because, anyway, I'll do another two-hour show with you on that.
Yes,
topic.
As a pastor, you speak that language.
I do.
And so, but from a time standpoint... once you get certified, how often do you serve? And then what does it take to kind of get that ministry up and going? Because like you and Larry said earlier, it takes a while to develop those relationships so that people will actually begin to open up to you.
You need to develop a routine where you can see the people that you're assigned to on a regular basis, where they see your face on a regular basis. So, for instance, police officers in a lot of places work a 28-day rotation. Out of that 28-day rotation, they'll work days and nights split. And what you do is if in Durham, I tell our guys, just pick one day a week and you go in at that same time every day, and you'll be able to see everybody that you serve once a month. So you have to be methodical with it. You just have to be intentional.
And so what then happens? Because when I walked in here today here at Emergency Chaplains, I think I heard a police scanner. Did I hear a scanner? So how do you know where to go and when? How does that actually function?
Well, what you heard was one of our radios here in the office where our crisis response team, which is a little bit different than directly serving the officers or any of the first responders. We have a crisis response team here in Durham and in Person County also where we go assist first responders typically on a scene where someone has died. So we have a whole response system set up. We are deeply integrated with the first responder agencies here to be able to serve them. That gives us a platform to build relationships with first responders while providing a vital ministry to the community.
And then just take us into like something that you've been to recently, because I know you walk into some really difficult situations, officer-involved shootings, things like that. But just give us a good example of where a chaplain would be on site and minister to police officers.
Let me give you one we had just a short time ago, two kids died in a vehicle accident that where the car hit a tree and exploded into flames.
Oh, man.
And the two children were in the back seat when the fire department gets there. So everybody is affected by this scene, the bystanders, the neighbors that came out, the fire department first, EMS, and law enforcement. And we stood in the rain that night, circled up in the roadway, and we held hands and prayed. Mm-hmm. Because this group of first responders, police, fire, and EMS, were all deeply, deeply affected. And then I leave there and I go to the communications center because they heard the phone call.
Yeah,
they heard
gosh.
The screams. It's unimaginable.
A lot of dominoes in that room.
Yes, yes.
And then just to be there to minister to them, listen, pray with them.
Yep, and just to be that listening ear, just a comforting.
Wow.
It's hard to believe that when I walk in a door sometimes I'm a comforting sight to people.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're looking at me right now like no way.
Yeah.
No way, right?
No, I could totally see that. Well, I mean, you guys, you have your badge that you wear and people know who you are and you've built those relationships. So besides the chaplaincy, how else can we get involved and help emergency chaplains? And then I want to make sure you talk about your plea to the church and your plea to officers as well.
You can always financially support us. We'll never have enough money to do this.
Yes,
I promise you.
That's right.
But if the Lord's laid that on your heart, go to our website, eChap. It's eChap, E like emergency, CHAP like chaplain, .org, eChap.org. You can find out about our banquet, be a sponsor there, do our 5K, 10K run. Might be virtual because of COVID. We don't know. But all the funds that we raise from that go directly into the ministry. If the Lord has caused your heart to flutter about becoming a chaplain and you are just a layperson, I shouldn't say that, right? But what I'm saying is you don't have to be an ordained pastor.
Right, right.
You don't have to be ordained. And if that's something that's come up to you, the Lord's quickened your heart, call me. Give us a call. You'll find our phone numbers on our website.
Yeah, just like Jerry, who heard last time you were on, heard you and then started a chapter out there in Yadkinville in North Carolina. So a plea to the church and a plea to officers.
All right, let me talk to the church first. Church, we have an enormous role in praying for peace right now in our country, and we need to start that prayer for peace. Let me tell you why I'm saying that. The initial thought for some of us when we're talking about blue flu and things like that, where people are bailing out, police officers calling in sick, and they say, if that city would just burn down, then we'll teach those people the old I told you so mentality.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me tell you, that's straight from hell.
Yep.
The I told you so mentality is not what we need to be. We need to be praying for our police officers. We need to pray for peace in the cities. We need to pray for those in authority. Pray for the president, everybody in federal government. Pray for our governor, our mayors. The Congress, city council, I can go down the line. Pray for our police officers to have wisdom. Pray for these people in authority to have wisdom, to rule with wisdom. Pray for their salvation. Pray for them by name. Pray for the police chief. Pray for your sheriff. Pray for police officers. Find out their names and pray for them by name for their protection because they have a dangerous job.
Amen.
Pray for their wisdom and guidance because they make split-second decisions. Pray for their families who have sacrificed them to serve. Pray for those who mourn over the loss of fallen officers, those who have died in the line of duty. And I want to say next to the officers, guys, men and women, if you hate your job, if you have thoughts of leaving, I'm begging you to stay on the job. But while I'm begging you, I want you to pray about if you should stay. Pray. Pray with your family. Pray where do you want us, God? Pray and ask God, is this my call? And if it's your call, please, please stay and be a peacemaker where you are. Please be continue to be that servant to the people. Call me if I can help you. Call us here. My number, 919-280-8908. You can call me, 919-280-8908.
Ralph, God bless you, brother. Thank you so much for that and for allowing me to be here today, for all that you and your team do, for blessing our officers, EMT, first responders, fire department. Such an important ministry, and God bless you. I really appreciate you.
Thanks, brother.
You're welcome. Remember that, to pray for those officials top down, like you said, as well as our officers, especially. And officers, if you're listening and you want to talk to Ralph, call him. He'll take your call, 919-280-8908, or get a hold of me at the Steve Noble Show, and I'll get you connected. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.